once again gets the ethical tin opener and sets about some moral cans of worms.
Welcome to Dilemma! Hello, you. Welcome to Dilemma, the show that takes moral and ethical preconceptions and smashes them to pieces, like X Factor does with the hopes and dreams of a child. I'm Sue Perkins, and joining me tonight, one of the nation's favourite comedians who's been sadly reduced these days to presenting a TV show about baking. Oh, shame on you, television industry! It's Joe Brand! A musician who presents Late Junction on Radio 3. Oh, sorry, that's Radio 3. I'll start again. A musician who presents Late Junction on Radio 3. It's Maura Carlisle! Next, a journalist and former MP who was once offered a job as a spy. A good job he turned it down. He can't even keep a job offer a secret. It's Matthew Paris! Last but certainly not least, a comedian, improviser and writer who won a BAFTA for his work on the MTV series The Osbournes. It's remarkable, the highs and lows of that sentence. Please welcome the magic Michael Legg! Right, so we're going to start with a round of hypothetical problems, which act like massive magnets placed right next to our panel's moral compasses. We start with you, Joe. This is your dilemma now. An expectant mum that you know wants to call their child Oedipus. Now, they clearly haven't read the story, they've just heard the name somewhere. They think it sounds nice. Do you tell them the origin of the name?
Well, I think, first of all, this is quite a complex problem. Get it? Oh, God, sometimes I shock myself with my own cleverness. It's a difficult one. I think the fact that she's not had the child yet is a good thing. Because once you've had the child and called it something ridiculous, there's no way back. My mum was a social worker. She's retired now. And someone came into her office one day many years ago with their new baby. And she said, oh, he's lovely. What's his name? And she said, Gooey. And so that's a very unusual name. How do you spell that? And this woman said, G-U-Y. And
Gooey.
She'd obviously seen it on the page, but not known how to pronounce it. So I think I would say something, yes.
Really? What would be the reason that you'd say something? Do you think the child would be bullied? Do you think that for some reason they would take on the attributes of the mythical Oedipus and she might be in danger?
I mean, there's every chance that a child would be bullied without a name like Oedipus, so that doesn't exactly help. I think children are very cruel, and they would bully the child.
They could just shorten it, though, to Puss. That might help.
Or Edie, in which case that'd be quite odd if they were a boy. Because I had an auntie Edie. I still don't really know what her real name was.
Do you think it was Oedipus?
It might have been. Auntie Oedipus.
Is Joe short for Jocasta? Is that what the problem is?
Oh, do you know what? You're so clever. Was Jocasta Oedipus's mum?
I think she was.
Was she?
And if she wasn't, I'm not very clever. Matthew will know.
I knew...
Oedipus?
No. A lovely Nigerian woman whose name was Weetabix. I asked her if her parents had been wise, and she said, well, they wanted me to have an English name, and so they just went to the shop and they looked for an English name. And I've always thought, if only we could all be called after cereals. I'd love to be Sugar Puffs.
You'll always be Sugar Puffs to me, darling.
Oh, okay.
I now want to ask everybody what cereal they'd be called. Michael, what cereal would you
be? Well, I've got psoriasis, thanks for bringing it up, so I'm often called Flakes.
Oh, don't groan at psoriasis. Don't now. Come on.
Yeah, come on, guys. We've all got it. Now. I don't know. I have no idea, to be honest.
Mara, if you had to choose a cereal that would be your name forever, what would it be?
I'm still stuck on the name thing. Well, I was thinking, I sort of have personal experience of this. I've had a few people approach me saying, oh, we'd like to name our child, you know, Mara, it's such a pretty name, and we'd like to name a child. And I always say, hold up, there's a reason there aren't that many Maras. And it's because it just means really terrible things in other languages.
What does it mean?
It's in the Bible, in the Book of Ruth, it means bitterness in Hebrew. It's basically the Buddhist equivalent of Satan.
Michael, what would you do if you knew that a friend of yours was going to name their child something that had a sort of a deeper meaning or a more sinister meaning?
If a child's called Oedipus, and you're talking about being bullied at school, it's not really going to happen, really, is it? Because you go, Oedipus, you love your mum. And he'd just go, well, you've been studying mythology.
It's true. There's only one thing less cool than sleeping with your mother, and that is knowing about the classics.
I learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
Also, what I think is lovely, that in Kosovo, there's lots of children called Tony Blair, aren't there? Because they're named after Tony Blair.
Tony Blair.
I went to Albania hoping, amongst other things, to disprove Tony Blair's claim that lots of children were called Tony Blair. The claim is true. There are lots of children called Tony Blair.
Oh, dear. Let's just leave it at that. What's the point of life?
I know.
Mara, it is your turn. Mara the Bitter, as we've discovered. Your dilemma is this, right? You used to live next door to, I think, what's technically known as a little scroat. A naughty, naughty young boy who has now become famous and the subject of your daughter's first tween crush. Do you break your daughter's heart and tell her the boy she loves was horrid?
I mean, I would say definitely tell her because, you know, life is pretty hard and people are horrible, generally. So I think...
What happened to Mara the Good? Are you saying then that somebody who is badly behaved when they're 14 can't change? What were you doing at 14?
That's none of your business.
Let me read then the law report.
Yes, fair point. I would hope that I would not be judged on the ridiculous things I wore and the terrible poetry I wrote and any other... Heinous, thanks, you're really making me feel better.
So because he could have blossomed into a charming man that is actually worthy of your daughter's affections, he could have become a role model.
Is this possible?
No, it's not possible. No.
Why not?
No, people don't change. No, nobody changes after they're about 4 years old. And we have a duty to tell our friends what people are like. There's no possibility of anybody ever changing. Has anyone ever changed in our lives? No. What you are when you're a child, you remain.
Do you think, I mean, I know developmentally you're fairly, you know, there are elements of you that are very fixed, you know, by the age, as you say, around about four. But the environment can play a huge seismic factor in altering behaviour.
No, it's all in the genes.
So, the Matthew Paris we see sitting here was just a sort of smaller version of the age of four.
Oh, yes, I was an insufferable. But the first thing I remember hearing my father say to me was, stop making an exhibition of yourself.
Michael, what do you think? Do you have kids?
No, thanks for asking. I haven't been blessed, or I have been, depends on your point of view.
I think we're a remarkably unfecund panel, bar the gorgeous Joe Brand, who has mated for all of us.
And who would have thought it? To rank myself to death, smoke myself to death. Overweight by about 14 and a half tons. And yet I managed it. How did that happen?
Would you break your daughter's heart if they had a terrible...
What, little psoriasis? would I? Yes.
Because you once were the next-door neighbour of a 14-year-old boy.
Are we talking about someone that's, like, become a...
He's like the Justin Bieber. That's a bad example. he's like, I'm now trying
Harry
to think...
Harry Styles. He's fairly well-behaved, isn't he, now? I don't know, is he?
Well, he's fairly well-behaved unless you're a woman between the ages of 18 and 85 within a 40-mile radius, in which case he's an absolute
really?
Poppet.
Oh, how encouraging. let's get round there.
Yeah. To be honest, I'd be tempted to give it a go.
Is Harry Styles an old shagger, then? I didn't know that.
Where
Sorry,
have you been?
I
Under
know you
a
can't
rock?
Say that on Radio 4. Sorry, let me use the correct radio forward. Is Harry Styles a bit of a Lothario?
I'm writing that down. That's a lovely name if I ever do have a child.
You know, he's just your neighbour for a couple of weeks. You're just going to rain on your daughter's parade.
But why are we all assuming the little anorexia or whatever she's called? Why are we assuming
I would never
that,
call
she,
my daughter anorexia,
that she can't take advice? And weigh up what we've said and perhaps discount it.
Who were your heroes when you were growing up?
Dan Dare, and the Mekon, actually.
The Mekon was your hero.
Yeah, well, the Mekon was an early role model for the disabled in many ways.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And
if somebody had said, I knew him when he was 14?
Yeah.
And he was a real Burke. So, were you to have kids, would you apply this now, Mara, or would you just absolutely retain your thing that, no, they need to be told?
I'm with Matthew. No, I'm with Matthew. I'm a big fan of the bigger picture, actually.
Mm.
I think it's very empowering for young people to be able to make their own choices.
Bad mummy. Matthew, we turn to you. Your partner has bought you a terrible book for your anniversary present. It's terrible. They thought you would love it, okay? You have to read it. It's dreadful. They ask you if it's good. Do you tell them the truth?
Of course. Of course. You see,
that's the end of the round.
I'm going to come over all serious here, but the underlying mistake, the implicit wrong assumption in your argument is that because I love somebody very much, I wouldn't want to tell them the truth. The more you love somebody, the more you need to tell them the truth. My partner, Julian, were he to give me a book that I didn't like or knew I wouldn't like, I would tell him straight away. Now, were it a distant auntie or some friend whom I didn't know very much who had given me something that I wouldn't like, I'd say, how marvellous, lovely, I'm looking forward to reading it. But if Julian gave me a book I didn't like, I'd say, Julian, I don't like that book. Simple, simple.
What if Julian had written that book? Where does the honesty stop in relationships, Theo? Or is it just always, I don't like that?
If Julian were the kind of person who could write a book that I didn't like, he would never have been my partner in the first place.
All right, but Julian has not taken on board your dislike of his potential writing, and he's been writing in secret, and he should... It's been bound in calfskin. He bound it himself. The dedication on the front. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. The prose is so light. It's like gossamer. He hands it over. What do you say to him?
I say, sorry, Julian, but that book is really not for me. It's not my kind of thing. No, you've... with people that you love, you've got to be honest.
Even if it ends the relationship.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't, because, believe me, none of you know Julian. He'd be much ruder to me about something I gave him that he didn't buy.
Michael, have you ever looked into the eyes of someone you love and told a little lie to make them feel better?
I have told the truth when I have got a terrible present sometimes, but equally, I think lying about a present is good for it. And funnily enough, when it comes to books, it's a really good idea. Someone bought me Kimberly Walsh's autobiography. yep, you've read it. We've all read it, Kimberly Walsh. And as revenge, what I did was I read it. And then every time I saw my friend, I went into detail about how great that book is. Wow, I can quote that book. Do you want a quote from Kimberly Walsh's autobiography?
Yes, please.
I remember one person turning to me and saying the band were great. And I replied, yeah, we are. Who's the red-haired one again? That's what she said. She forgot the name of her own band member.
So you've used their inappropriate gift-giving to turn back on them as a sort of, you know, to sort of spite them.
Why not? If you've got me this horrible thing, I'm dragging you down with me.
Joe, without getting into detail about how your relationship works, do you find that white lies kind of lubricate the situation, or are you brutally honest?
Well, I think it's a good idea to lie about, like, having a lover, for example. And a flat that they don't know anything about.
The children.
Idea not to tell. And, yeah, children. And, well, really, like, if that is the space available for lying, use it all. That's what I say.
Yeah.
So it spices up the relationship. Don't even tell them your proper name. My husband thinks I'm called Sue Perkins.
Nothing
he
good.
He thinks I'm really good on the radio.
Mara, have you ever received a present, a book or otherwise, that you've been forced to lie about or have come clean about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely have, but I have this problem, like some kind of... It's like a kind of truth-telling Tourette's when asked a direct question. And I beseech you not to test me.
I'm now going to test you.
On this, but so it's fine if, you know, if someone who... obviously, I know, you know, a lot of musicians and, you know, if someone says, like, what do you think? that's a really open question. And, you know, there's lots of different ways you can lie about how much you, or things you appreciated about it. But if someone directly says, did you like it? I'm literally going, oh, like this voice is going, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And it will just come out like a...
Do you make that noise? Oh.
I really feel for Mara. Here, I have the same problem. Jeremy Paxman asked me once about Peter Mandelson on Newsnight, and it all just popped out. And it popped out.
I think it's very important to accept all gifts graciously, no matter how terrible they are. Just remember to have a different username on eBay for flogging them onwards. Michael, your turn now. You need a bone marrow transplant, and you really need this. The only available match turns out to be from a member of the EDL. Do you accept it?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, that's good. He'll be in pain.
Well, the drawing of the marrow will cause him...
Yeah. And of course, you know, it'll be a lovely time when you're out and about, you're with friends, and they go, oh, look at old Michael there, eh? He hasn't got a racist bone in his body. I'll stop you there. And you know when people say, well, do you know, we're all a little bit racist, it's nice to point to the bit that is.
Joe, would you accept a racist's bone marrow?
Yeah.
For what reason, do you think?
For being alive reasons. Would I rather be dead or have some racist bone marrow? That's a hard one, too. Oh, yes, I'd rather be dead.
I mean, would you take Adolf Hitler's heart?
Well, that's a lovely song.
Yeah. I left my heart in a Berlin bunker. Yes, I would. No, yes, I would. Would you?
Yes, yes.
Mm. Would you take Hitler's heart, Mara?
I mean, surely, I believe in the capacity for all things to change, and maybe I could change racist bone marrow into the non-racist.
It's a lovely idea. Adolf Hitler's heart embedded in Mara, the heart slowly turning to goodness and sweetness because of Mara. I think that's a nice thought.
Thanks, Matthew.
It's
the epitome of subverting from within, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
And Mara saying, good evening, welcome to Radio 3. I've decided not to invade Poland. And everyone going, hurrah!
How about the hands of a war criminal?
The hands of a war criminal.
Would you accept the hands of a war criminal?
But some people say I've got the hands of a war criminal. I look after my nails so badly.
At the end of that round, I'm going to award the moral high ground to Mara! Right, now it's time for the audience to tell us about some of their dilemmas, because not only does it make this show funny and entertaining, but it's cheaper for them than legal advice. Let's start by talking to somebody who's hilariously said their name is Sue Perkins, as genuine, isn't me, who said, I am moving into a shared house with a lovely gay couple and their dog, who's called Churchill. Although playful and friendly, Churchill suffers from chronic flatulence, which his owners seem not to notice. How do I politely bring this to her attention? I do not want other house guests to assume that such odours are emanating from me rather than their pooting pooch. Can we put a face to this dilemma? Let's have the house lights up a little bit. There you go. Man there with the arms of a serial killer. Did you have those? What's your name, by the way, sir?
Sue.
It's very nice to meet you, Sue.
A boy named Sue.
Anybody own dogs on the panel?
Yep.
What would you suggest?
Well, Sue, are you sure that the whiffy smells are definitely from the dog and not your other two flatmates?
90% sure.
Yeah, that's a tricky 10%.
Yep. Yeah, that is.
Now, Sue, how old are you? Perhaps 50, 55?
Oh, you flatter me.
How old?
Around there.
You see the... You see, for you, the age of flatulence is also beginning to dawn.
I love that. This is the dawning of the age of flatulence.
And from now on, you're going to be able to blame it on the dog. Think of it as an opportunity. I'm 65. I bent over rather suddenly in my flat the other day. And my lodger, Tom, there was a pause, and Tom said, and so it begins. Blame the dog.
Beat it at its own game. Every time you blow off, just look at the dog and go, chessmate.
Mara, what would you suggest? I mean, the sort of consensus seems to be this is a benefit in the house.
I can't see that. I can't see it as a benefit. I think it sounds like a terrible, terrible situation.
Do you ever do a lady puff?
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Sue, has that helped in any way?
In ways I cannot express.
I wish you and Churchill many happy hours out trumping one another.
Thank you.
A round of applause for Sue. My ex-wife, says the next dilemma, is getting married in a few weeks' time. My daughter, who can't stand the new guy, has asked me to come to the wedding as her plus one. Should I go? I know. Proper dilemma. Hands up, please. Hands up. Right, what is your name, sir?
Paul.
Paul, are you with family members today? Have you come with your family?
It's my girlfriend.
Oh, your girlfriend. Oh, so this is like... Oh, yeah, OK. But anyway, we'll get to you in a minute. Joe!
Is your daughter a sociopath?
From time to time.
You can't be a sociopath from time to time.
Why does your daughter want you to go? Does she not? Surely she has friends. Or does she not have a partner that she can take?
I think she thinks it might spice it up a bit.
She's an agent provocateur, Matthew.
Yes, that's more.
What
like
do you reckon to this?
I think you should go. Leave it to the last minute. Rush up. Bang on the glass doors.
Yeah.
And then when she goes, really? Go, nah. Only joking.
Can we speak to your partner? How do you feel about Paul potentially going to his ex-wife's wedding?
I personally think it'd be a bad idea, but I don't have a problem if he goes.
Right.
So it would make it more interesting. But...
I wonder whether you could get it commissioned as a reality show. I think it would be hugely entertaining.
You should definitely go. Definitely go. Definitely go and enjoy the reception afterwards. Meet the guy. You know, when he goes, oh, yeah, it was great. You know, we wrote our own vows. You go, yeah, no, it was good to hear them again.
Matthew, is that the sort of thing you do just to wreak revenge? Not even revenge, but just to, as you say, spice it up a little bit.
No, I wouldn't go for revenge. I would just go out of good nature. Why not? No, I would go. I would get a column or two out of it, but that's...
Mara the Bitter, we return to you. Is this the sort of situation you could see yourself in?
Yes, actually, I can, because I have an ex-husband and we're on very good terms. And in fact, I've been in a position of DJing with him and his girlfriend, which is a very modern setup. I think you'll agree. But I was going to say, I think it depends upon how much you revel in other people's social discomfort. Because it sounds like you feel pretty comfortable with the set. So you can just have so much fun just watching other people squirm. Just like, ooh, it's really...
What records did you play?
Is she really going out?
I mean, you say how comfortable is Paul with social discomfort? We have to remind ourselves he has gone on national radio giving his name, discussing his ex-wife's future nuptials.
My real name's Sue.
Oh, they're all Sues tonight. We move on. This is our final dilemma. I'm very excited about the new Sainsbury's opening around the corner. But not wanting to lose my strictly no-talking relationship with the man at Londis that I've spent years working on. What to do? Mara, let's turn to you first.
I really relate to this, I think. And I think I do something really weird and very typically English and not want to offend either Sainsbury's with you, who clearly doesn't care about me, and Mr. Londis. And I think I'd probably end up buying things I didn't need just to maintain the relationship with Mr. It sounds like a beautiful relationship
it does.
You have. I think you should foster it.
Do you try and get extra cash back so he thinks you're a bit loaded?
I've not tried it yet. I could. I wasn't
just
trying
saying.
To make that impression.
Joe, where would you go with this one? The silent beauty of...
I'm already in a coma about... Go back into London and have a chat to him if you don't want to shop there anymore.
I couldn't disagree with Joe more. I've wasted years of my life.
You know I'm having an affair with Julian.
I've wasted years of my life patronising places just because there was somebody whose eye I wanted to catch. Of course it's completely pointless, but you can't. You can't change yourself. Keep going to Londis, never mind Sainsbury's, and who knows? Who knows?
Michael, do you agree?
Totally agree. Definitely keep going to Londis. You know what? You didn't make eye contact, then you made eye contact. Give it another, I don't know, 5 years, your eyes might touch. Wouldn't that be nice?
Best of luck. Round of applause for Sammy and for Paul. So at the end of that round, I'm going to award the moral high ground to Matthew! Finally, after tiptoeing around the moral crevasse for far too long, it's time to plunge headfirst into the quickfire round, where our guests must make as many snap judgments on important ethical issues as they can before they hit the ground. Fingers on buzzers, everyone? Nuclear war or David Bowie hates you? Michael.
On nuclear war!
Yep, absolutely correct. Eat a Mars bar every day, or there's a bounty on your head. Joe.
Eat a Mars bar every day, not quite enough, though.
Yes, correct answer. Your legs are both vacuum cleaners, or your torso's a dishwasher. Mara.
Vacuum cleaners, so much fun.
Correct. Publicly praise Fox News, or bully the Queen.
Hey, let's have a go at the Queen.
I think she can take it. Furry legs or scaly back?
Furry legs.
Joe?
Got both.
Yes, but speaking of experience, which do you prefer?
Oh, furry legs. Whatever it was.
Furry everything. Secluded waterfall or massive sandwich?
Massive sandwich.
Correct! Live in prison or die in Salford?
Live in prison.
Oh, wrong answer. You're an OK singer or the world's greatest tambourine player? Mara.
Oh, tambourine, much underrated instrument.
Correct. Homeless saint or wealthy kitten strangler?
Wealthy kitten strangler.
Oh, it's the relish. You're a bad, bad man is wrong. Allergic to kissing or addicted to touching yourself?
What a lovely description of me.
I think we know where you're going. Wear a biohazard suit on holiday or a bikini to job interviews?
Mara. Bikini.
Oh, bikini is the right answer. At the end of that round, indeed the end of the show, the guest occupying the moral high ground is Michael. So thanks to them and to our other guests, and thank you at home for listening. Good night. That was Dilemma, presented by me, Sue Perkins. It featured Joe Brand, Mara Carlisle, Michael Legg and Matthew Paris. The Dilemmas were created by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, Simon Kane, Sarah Morgan, David Reed, Danielle Ward and Andy Wilton. The show was devised by Danielle Ward and the producer was Ed Morrish.
And Dilemma will be back at the same time next week when Sue's guests will include Susan Moore and Shappy Corsandi. We'll be heading to Ambridge after the news to find that Helen can't believe her ears and the birds are in full voice. After the Archers on Front Row at 7:15, the sculptor Anthony Gormley discusses his latest artwork featuring 5 rusty iron life-size sculptures, each weighing 700 kilograms, which will be placed at various locations across the UK for the next year. Kirsty Lang presents Front Row tonight. Now a bit of general election music from Pippa Evans.
If you don't know who to vote for when May the 7th comes, the red, orange, blue, yellow or green or our favourite UKIP chums, then just tune in to Stephen Hugh, who'll poke fun at the dross. And come election time, just close your eyes and draw a cross.
The Vote Now show continues on Wednesday night at 11 and is then available on the BBC Radio 4 website.